And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary Gilbert. It's my co-host, Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Doing fine. Doing fantastic.
Doing good. Let me hit you with my favorite segment, Surprise Dan with the Topic. Here's my topic. Is LeVar Ball perfect for FS1? Is he going to save FS1 by attacking white women on the air?
No man can save Fox Sports 1. It is a sinking ship. But, I mean, I gotta defend him a little bit. Like, that white woman did say he was a shitty dad. And basically, they called him a bad father. Like, yeah. I don't know, you call somebody a bad dad, you kind of get what you get. Like,
I mean, that's probably,
I mean, I feel like there's very few fighting words in our society anymore because we've kind of gotten pretty gross and coarse as a society. But when you tell somebody that they're a shitty dad, like, well, I mean, Jesus, like what?
I think that's a good point. LeBron got really mad too when he got called a shitty dad not too long ago.
Yeah, that was like somebody went over the line with him on that stuff too. It's just like I've never been a big believer in like rushing to defend somebody who gets like if you like punch somebody in the face and then they hit you over the head with a hammer. Well, you shouldn't have punched him in the face. Like, you can't complain that the hammer was too hard. Like, you initiated this shit. Like, you went there. You gotta live with it.
Yeah. Let's transition to kind of what I want to talk about. I think this might be a little bit longer to talk about, so I want to kind of jump into our main event here. This little column from ESPN kind of piqued my interest, and it's not that I necessarily care what ESPN has to say, but I'm interested to see what kind of propaganda they're spreading to the masses, especially with their college football coverage, because ESPN is going to push certain teams and conferences a little bit more than others, obviously, because of TV rights deals. You think that's fair to say, Dan? So, Dan, I want to jump in now to this article I saw at ESPN. I think I DM'd it to you earlier. The 10 college football games with the highest stakes in 2017. This is from ESPN. I'm interested to see what kind of propaganda is ESPN pushing on the college football world. Take a deep dive into this.
Yeah, these are always something because they're never written by people that you care about, like, or they never have like a single byline. Like on this article, the byline is Chris Lowe and Adam Rittenberg. So yes. Like, both of them have plausible deniability over it. Also, neither one of them have ever been like known as, oh man, this is a hell of a reporter. Like,
yeah,
this isn't Phil Steele.
This isn't like Brett McMurphy writing something. Which that will always fuck me up that they let Brett McMurphy go, but they kept Joe Shad, Adam Rittenberg, and Chris Lowe. Like what?
So what this is essentially is just some, I think, like a corporate-produced content to really push games that you're probably airing for ESPN. Like, maybe you throw a couple that'll be on Fox on there so it doesn't look too obvious, but the end goal here is to hype up your television product for ESPN. That's why this article was made. Let's be honest. That's why it's here.
Yeah, and hype certain conferences. Like, even the ones that might end up being on Fox, you're also hyping, like, people who you like, they split rights with Fox on a number of different, on a number of different conferences. So, ooh, you hyped something that's going to be on Fox, but you've also got their rights for other games. So
if Texas is good, they're going to end up in the college football playoffs. So even if all their big games are on Fox, you still want to hype up Texas because they're going to boost your ratings for the playoffs. So if you're ESPN, you got your hands in lots of pots.
And then the other aspect of these articles is that. It's also like a hits play because if you go through it, every school on that list except one, and we'll talk about them first, is a major brand name school.
Yeah.
Both, like, at least half the schools on this list are kind of shitty.
But yeah.
They've all got big brand names. Must watch.
You know what this reads to me? Like a lazy article you'd see in like Time magazine or something. To tell the masses, like, oh, here are two teams you've heard of, they're playing, like Notre Dame and Georgia. But I think really most college football camp, you're not really that excited about Notre Dame and Georgia.
Yeah, nobody who follows the sport closely even wants to see that game.
No. But it is something I think casuals will say, oh, I've never seen these two teams play. Sure. You know, I think that is something like people might stop and look at. But it's not an impactful game necessarily. So that was probably one of my main problems with this list. So let's start with the first, number 10, Oklahoma State Cowboys at Texas Longhorns, October 21st.
Yeah, nobody's going to care about this game because it's Big 12 and nobody watches the Big 12.
Yeah.
Like, nobody gives a shit. Nobody gives a shit about the Big 12. So, but this is ESPN's desperate attempt to try to make the Big 12 seem like something anybody would want to see. Because they still have the TV rights for half of their games. Fox has the other half. And it's like, we got to shine this turd up. Hopefully somebody will watch their bullshit. Because, oh boy, their ratings are a disaster. Let's see what we can see. Also, you know, for the Big 12's long-term existence, everybody needs Texas to get good. Everybody wants Texas to be good because without Texas being good, it's just Oklahoma and a bunch of freeloaders.
Yeah.
So the entire college football ecosystem that wants stability needs Texas to be good. And we'll see.
Yeah. But that is like one I am intrigued by that game, I will say. Especially to... Because we'll kind of see how these teams are looking coming into October 21st. This could be a game that does decide the Big 12, in theory.
The biggest thing to look for in that game is has the defense improved at all?
Yeah.
Because we're going from Charlie Strong, who never seemed to be able to get anything figured out there in Texas, to Tom Herman, who brought Todd Orlando with him. And Todd Orlando built a pretty good defense at Houston with subpar talent, because most of Houston's good recruiting went on the offensive side of the ball. So he was able to do some pretty good shit with their defense at Houston. Let's see what he can do at Texas.
Yeah. I think Oklahoma State lost to Texas last year, actually.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a revenge game for Oklahoma State. But not, this isn't one of the top 10 impactful games, right?
No! No, this isn't like the, this. I'm not even sure it's a top five most impactful game in the Big 12.
Yeah.
But I think it goes to show how pathetic the Big 12 is that this is the only conference matchup on the list from the Big 12.
Yeah. Oh, there are other teams from the Big 12, but this is the only in-conference.
Yeah, those are out-of-conference games. Nobody cares about what's going to... Like, the Big 12 seems like such a foregone conclusion that Oklahoma's going to win it.
Yeah.
And if Oklahoma doesn't win it, you're basically just like, well, if Oklahoma doesn't win it, then oh my god, they're like can we move their bowl game to like the Car Care Bowl? Can we move their conference champion to the Car Care Bowl?
I think the next game though, I can't imagine this one being that necessarily impactful either. Washington Huskies at the Stanford Cardinals, November 10th. You'll remember last year Washington hammered Stanford.
Yeah.
I think it was what, 44-6.
It was a beatdown. I can't imagine giving a shit about watching Washington versus Stanford. Like, Stanford is hard to watch in the best of time. I don't know. The Pac-12 just doesn't look that good this year. This is ESPN going, well, we can't just say there's no Pac-12 games worth watching. So we'll throw them in the 9 spot so it's not obvious.
Yeah.
If we put them at 10, everyone would notice.
Kind of an earlier prediction. I think I'm going to pick like a team like Utah or something to win the Pac-12. This seems like a Utah-Arizona State year.
I feel really good about UCLA. I like them hiring Jed Fish as their offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Let's jump down to number 8. This game maybe should be higher. Florida State at Clemson, November 11th. This is another game that could decide the ACC right here. This could be one of the bigger games of the year, and it'll probably be one of the one of the first few major tests for Clemson.
I mean the big thing with the ACC, and Bud Elliott had a great article up at SB Nation, is that the ACC as a conference lost a ton of offensive talent. And there's a ton of blue-chip defensive talent that all came back. So the ACC is going to look a lot like the SEC this year because it's just going to be all of this, like, stud first-round defensive talent across the league, especially, though, at Clemson and Florida State, and then all the quarterbacks graduated.
Yeah.
You know, and all the skill position offensive players graduated. So this game could really easily be a slugfest. That could be, like, a 12 to... 5. Like, yeah. Winner 12 to 5. That's the winning score.
Speaking of a game that probably will definitely be a 12 to 5 score. Number 7, Auburn and LSU, October 14th. I don't see why you put this. If you got to put in like an Auburn game, then Auburn Clemson seems like the bigger impactful game for both teams to start the season.
Yeah.
I don't get this. I don't get the inclusion here.
I don't get it either because these are both teams where, I mean, just from a standpoint of like, if I'm making a list that I don't want to end up looking stupid later, I would not pick these two teams because God knows what they're going to be.
Yeah.
Like these are two teams that could be 6-6 next year. They could both be 11-1.
Yeah. This could be a game that decides who goes, you know, who wins the West, or this could be a game that decides who maybe goes to the, you know, the Liberty Bowl.
This could be a game that decides who gets fired.
Like, yes. Much like last year.
Orgeron gets fired after 1 year when they go like 4-8.
Yeah.
And Matt Canada gets promoted to head coach after just 1 year.
Next up, another game I don't think I'm going to care about. October 7th, Wisconsin Badgers at Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I mean, there are people who have relatives who play for Nebraska who aren't going to care about this game.
No. I just, this is going to be one that's on at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. You're not going to watch it.
This is going to be an unholy ass-whipping, too. Like, Wisconsin's going to beat the living shit out of Nebraska. Nebraska's bad. It's a bad football team with a bad coach. Like, everything about them is bad. Like, you know, Stephen Godfrey's talked about this. Like, if Central Florida wins one game more than Nebraska this year, then Mike Riley's fired and Scott Frost goes home to Nebraska. Like, that's the situation at Nebraska right now.
Yeah,
and, the idea that they would be involved in a must-watch game is ridiculous. They're not a good team.
No, I mean, Nebraska did win 9 games last year, but it's kind of like an empty, it's empty calories right there.
Yeah, they won 9 games in the worst division in BCS. In a major conference, they won 9 games in the worst division in a major conference, and they didn't beat a single team worth a damn. Like, it's just all like, yeah, man, they beat the shit out of Purdue. Like,
yeah,
You showed them Boilermakers.
Yeah. Speaking of game that'll probably be a blowout, the Gators versus the Wolverines, September 2nd, kickoff. This one's going to be ugly, or it could be where Harbaugh, like, trips and fucks up and, like, Florida beats him, and he just gets angry.
SEC. Like, Nebraska. Michigan's going to beat them by 30. Like, this is going to be, the game where everybody at Florida starts talking about, should we keep McElwain? Like,
yeah.
I don't even know how this game makes this list other than these are two teams with big names, but like,
and Florida this game's probably on ABC, I don't assume.
But Florida has done nothing to deserve a benefit of the doubt from anybody. And they're unwatchable. Florida is the most unwatchable team in college football. That team is putrid to watch.
Remember how quarterbacks bad all they were? Suck. Yeah, remember how bad that SEC title game was last year? Where any other team with a decent offense would have had a shot with the way their defense was playing, but just awful, horrible play.
It's just Alabama, like, everybody with a brain could kind of look at last year's Alabama team and go, you know what, they're kind of just getting by on a weak schedule. Like, the SEC isn't as strong as it used to be. They really don't have a good quarterback. their defense hasn't really had to play a good quarterback. This is a team that can get got. This is a beatable team.
Yeah.
And then, but when you saw Florida coming into the SEC title game, it's like, this Bama team's beatable, but Florida is not the team that will do it.
No, not at all. Next game, we talked about this earlier, a game I'm not sure anyone really cares about besides, like, maybe some curious people in the fan base, Georgia Bulldogs at the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
I'm perversely interested in this game. I have to give ESPN a little bit of credit.
Yeah.
I do have a perverse desire to see how this game turns out. Brian Kelly, like, this game, he needs to win it. He just does.
Well, this game, I have a lot of national SEC team. Georgia has they might not be the most popular team nationwide, but I do think Georgia does carry some respect. You know, the same way, like, maybe a Southerner or a Westerner might think of Wisconsin. I think that's a fair kind of comparison, where he's like, this team's good. You know, they're usually top. They usually have something on all.
Well, this is a team with a lot of talent. I think that's what anybody will say.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame always has that thing of, can they really hang with teams that have blue-chip talent?
Yeah. I kind of want to see both teams, though, wear, like, their colors. I want to see red on green this game. I want to see that lime green. Yeah.
Is this a neutral site game? Are they playing this in Atlanta?
I am not sure. It does not say.
That feels like the kind of move Notre Dame. Notre Dame's been playing a lot of neutral site games.
This is a home and home. This is a home and home.
That's interesting.
I think this is one of those where you both fan bases will travel to the other place, so it's going to be easy to sell packages and stuff.
I am really looking forward to a bunch of golf shirt wearing Georgia grads in ill fitting shorts and their red pants.
And those
what are those things that you put around your sunglasses?
With croquis.
Your croquis.
Yeah.
A golf shirt that's way too tight in the chest.
Red
and like
khaki and pants.
And baggy. It's baggy in the gut and like and tight on the chest somehow. I want to see what those people think of like swamp ass Indy. Like South Bend is literally in the most shitty ass part of a state that's not that fun to be in, period.
Yeah.
Like Indiana is not the garden spot of America, and no. South Bend is in like the armpit of Indiana, because it's the only place a bunch of Catholics could get land to build a college 200 years ago.
So I'm really
looking forward to that culture shock.
Yeah, I want to say even like I think my dad's going to that game. I think he's making the trip to South Bend. Because why wouldn't you, though? Like, I think that's an easy to, you know, if I'm Notre Dame, I definitely going to play schools like Georgia, especially if I know I'm going to suck. At least you can make some money.
I mean, maybe
putting together packages and things like that.
I mean, who am I, but I would rather be playing Michigan if I was them.
Yeah. But you're not. You're not right now. So.
They will be
here.
You
got to work with what you got.
Or two.
Yeah. Another great rivalry.
But that game is the interesting thing about it is obviously Brian Kelly's going into the season on the hot seat. Like, they have to win this year. They need at least 9 wins, I think, for him to keep his job. And 9 wins may not do it. I mean, 10,
and I think,
10 is safe. 9 probably. Anything less than 9, he's in trouble. And Kirby, if Kirby has another year like last year, he's going to be on the hot seat next year.
Yeah, this is one, if you're Kirby, you got to win. I don't want to say he's must-win already, but I think this is an easy out-of-conference game that you should win.
Okay,
and it just makes you look good.
If they had a 3-9 year, he gets fired, doesn't he?
Does he
get another year if they have a horrible year? So
it depends on what happens, I think. You know, if it's a lot of injuries, I think you got to look at things and say, how much was his fault?
But it's theoretically possible. There is a number of wins they could have this year.
No, I think a scandal does him in really quick, too. Because that was the other thing with Rick. Rick had a lot of problem players, but he never had, like, a big scandal because he always just kicked the players off right away.
Yeah. I mean, he had discipline on his team.
Yes. So I think a scandal would definitely do him smart. But I think a bad year, I think he gets another one. I don't think George is – because they don't want to look dumb for firing Rick. So you just can't, you know.
Yeah, you just gotta like pigheadedly pretend this relationship is working.
Yeah, like they'll do the coaching school equivalent of like taking the trip to Europe to save the marriage, and then it won't work. Next game, the A&M Aggies of Texas take on the Bruins of University of California, Los Angeles.
They play every year, don't they?
And they play like last year. It does.
And
like
it
they
never
play every
means
year,
anything.
No, it's a fun game. Was it last year's pretty fun?
Yeah, they always score a ton of points on each other, and then everyone like wants to declare the winner having done something, and then both teams fall apart.
Yeah,
and I know I just picked UCLA to win the Pac-12, but that's almost by default. Like, who else is going to win it?
Yeah, that's why I'm rolling with Utah or Arizona State.
Because it's totally not going to be USC. Like, come on. They've got a whole off season of hearing hype. They're fucked.
Yeah.
Like hype is the kryptonite to USC. They're only good when they're able to sneak up on you.
But so yeah,
I mean, these are two. I think the Bruins are going to have their way with the Aggies defense. I mean, if Chavis is trying, maybe this is the year that Texas A&M finally has a defense. I don't know, but like Jed Fish did some really good things at Michigan with Jim Harbaugh, and I think coaching with Harbaugh there at Michigan, like he kind of learned how to run a pro style offense at the college level and pare it down. I don't know. I just feel like Texas A&M is going to get boat raced in that game.
Yeah. But I think you're right. That's what I'm going to watch, but I don't see why this is one of your most impactful. I don't see why this is number three.
I mean, to be third.
Yeah.
I mean, what person in America thinks Texas A&M is a nationally elite team that you want, like that you desperately want to see their showdown with UCLA?
That's my main problem with this list. There was clearly no effort put into making it, and I don't know why it made me so angry when I saw it did. But I think it's just
took all of the out of conference matchups between major conference teams, and then put them on a list and like drew them out of a hat to decide what the order would be.
And made sure that they're all in, like, ESPN or Disney properties.
Yeah, and just made sure there was a Pac-12 game and a Big 12 game in there, too, so that, you know.
Because number two I don't get either, FSU in Florida, November 25th.
Like, no one's going to watch that game. Florida State's going to beat them by 100. Like, Jim McElwain's going to have to run out of the stadium to avoid being lynched. And it's like, there's going to be, like, a bunch of Florida State fans with, like, throwing inflatable sharks onto the field, and it's just going to be like no one's going to want to watch it.
The score of that game's going to be something ridiculous, like 45-21, and those 21 points are all scored in the fourth.
Like Florida's not going to get Florida. You could not. There's no way on earth Florida scores 21 points on Florida State.
I mean, like maybe like when the walk-ons are in,
they can't even do that.
Maybe like the special needs players will all score for Florida.
like Florida State will just decide to not put a defense on the field, and they'll still only get a 50-yard play out of it.
Florida leaves early because they're just like, we're going to get back to Thanksgiving. We're not concerned. Y'all can't come back and beat us here. But how the fuck is this number two? This is two?
I don't think Florida State has been a game like that you
since
would put
90s.
Number two.
Yeah.
Since like 2001. I feel like that was the last time they played a game anybody was like, oh man, this is a big game.
It's not even the biggest FSU game on the list. FSU Clemson. FSU Louisville to me is a more impactful, especially this year. It's a much more impactful game after what happened last year.
How about this? Alabama's not on the list.
No Bama. Yeah, we're going to get to number one in a second, but yeah, no Bama. Like, you pick Auburn, LSU, Alabama.
Florida is in two of the must-watch games of the year. Alabama, a team that's played in, like, seven straight national title games, apparently has no game worth watching this year.
I need to look up Alabama's schedule. Like, what's their big out-of-conference season opening game this year? Aren't they playing, like, FSU or something dumb?
I feel like they did have a big one. Let me see.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Vamp for me.
We'll find it. But that's just so... Alabama, like, if you're just putting a list together, popular... Alabama's one of the most popular programs in the goddamn country. I don't get it.
Starting the season with Florida damn State! Now it's on the list! What is this? There is not a single human being... I could line up the entire graduating class of Florida University, and not one of those sumbitches would rather watch their game than watch Alabama, Florida State.
Yeah.
There ain't one of them! Spencer Hall would burn down a museum before having to watch that game if he could.
Yeah. I don't get that. And like,
Steve Spurrier ain't showing up. He's just gonna go play golf that day. He can't be bothered to watch Florida State.
Jeez.
Wait a second. What network has Alabama Florida State?
It said to be announced on what I saw.
TBD.
So that tells me ESPN or ABC would be my guess.
Okay. The Chick-fil-A kickoff game. Do we
know
if it's
usually on ESPN?
Okay. I didn't know if Fox had the Chick-fil-A game.
No, Fox? No, but did you see that this week? I think Fox is going to get Ohio State Michigan now.
that disappointed me greatly because ESPN's very good at doing history stuff.
Yeah.
And Fox has never been good at history stuff.
But she'll get Gus Johnson yelling.
Yeah, and that's going to be even worse. Like
about how the
like I'm going to lose McDonough, who we've lost anyway from college sports because I think he's moved to Fox, if I'm not mistaken, to do NFL games. But you know, we've lost McDonough, and we're for you know Ohio State, Michigan, the best commentary team like ESPN had. Period was McDonough and Spielman, and yeah. And now we're gonna get Gus Johnson screaming about Woody Hayes.
Yeah,
I mean he's basically Jim Ross but black. Like him just screaming Eddie Woody Hayes by God, Woody Hayes yeah. by God.
While Eddie George says some stuff about like Buckeyes and you don't pay attention. Fox, baby. And then you'll maybe get like a Colin Cowherd segment at halftime. So that's what we have to look forward to this year.
But their number one game of the year on this list. Their yeah. number one game. Oklahoma versus Ohio State.
Which
hey man. Don't you want to see the rematch of a game Ohio State won by like 70 points last year?
Yeah, but I do think that's an important game for Oklahoma. I will say that that's one of the more important games of the year.
It could be on the list. The idea that that's number one when Oklahoma has proven over and over and over again they're not a nationally elite team. Like, why? Like, oh man, this is the year that Oklahoma proves they're something other than a 10-2 team. This is the year. Oh, they got beat again. But no. This is the year they got beat again. Oh. Like every time Oklahoma plays a nationally elite team, they lose. But this is the year it's going to be watchable. This is the year you're going to enjoy it. Fuck off. This list is horrid.
I'm just looking through the week one games. And yeah, I don't know how you don't include FSU Alabama. That's two main. That's two of the biggest programs in football playing each other. That's always a big deal. When they play each other,
and that game's gonna be crazy big for that area because that's like who controls the Gulf of Mexico?
Oh, A&M UCLA will be on Sunday that week one. So you're gonna get West Virginia Va Tech, and you know what we get this year on Monday, Dan? Tennessee Georgia Tech.
Oh man, Georgia Tech's gonna get him fired in week one, ain't they? Paul Johnson's gonna get a guy fired in week one.
That's gonna be that's a shitty main event. For week one.
What are you talking? We're going to get to see Butch Jones freaking out about cut blocks, walking up and down the sidelines screaming with a red face.
Why is Alabama FSU not the Monday night game? Why is this game getting disrespected? I don't understand. To me, that's a major matchup.
The premier game should be on Saturday, not on Monday.
No, Monday. Monday night main event.
I don't want to go head-to-head with Raw. That ratings powerhouse.
Yes.
I want Saturday, the established time slot for college football.
So yeah, and then now I'm sorry. Now I'm just distracted looking at the schedule. I'm really excited. As soon as I look at this college football schedule, Dan, I start thinking about the possibilities. LSU BYU on there. Yeah.
God, LSU and BYU.
I can't think of a culture clash greater. The LSU fan base.
That game is going to happen. I will put money right now. If I could go to Vegas, I would put money right now. There will be a fight during that game.
Yeah. I'm excited for that one.
Do you remember the BYU Memphis brawl?
Yes.
And BYU started that, which always makes me mad because when people bring that brawl up, they always want to shit on the Memphis kids because it's like, oh, Memphis. You know, we know those Memphis kids. They always get into fights.
You know,
with the good
they're
Mormon
not at a
white
Christian
boys.
School.
But, like, the Mormon kids started that shit. They played dirty all game long. They kept cutting guys' legs after the plays. There was a guy who kept tripping. And it was like, eventually Memphis had enough. And then a guy kicked another guy in the balls. Like, a BYU guy kicked a Memphis guy in the balls. And then the fight was on. That shit was all BYU. So that's BYU though. They're dirty. BYU will always play dirty.
Week three, Texas USC. That to me is more impact than Michigan Florida even. That's a huge game for like two programs trying to go in the right direction. How is that not on your list? I don't get this. I don't get it. I don't get this. This is the dumbest list I've ever seen.
It's not good. No. Everybody involved in it should be embarrassed.
Boston College.
Okay, now you're getting crazy.
Well, have they played each other in a while, though? That's what I was thinking. They haven't.
They used to play more often than they do now.
They used to play every year, and then, Boston College left for the ACC or whatever.
Yeah.
I can't remember if they played last year. The fan bases don't like it. They hate it. It's two of the most annoying.
Oh, these two fan bases, and this is a Catholic thing that, this is Jesuits versus, I can't remember what Notre Dame is. Notre Dame is one of the few colleges that's not Jesuit, one of the few American Catholic colleges that isn't Jesuit.
Are they Roman Catholic?
They're French. It's a French thing.
French or that, I don't know.
They're based they're all Roman Catholic, but they're off of some kind of French thing, and Notre Dame is super, super conservative. And the Jesuits tend to be a little bit more liberal.
Yeah.
And a little bit more the Bible's pretty good and the Pope's pretty good, but science is real. Science is a thing. You should learn that too. Whereas Notre Dame is whatever the Pope says is true. Whatever the Pope is right all the time. And so Notre Dame, I think especially Notre Dame fans, this is a bigger game to graduates, I think, than their larger fan bases. And it's a bigger deal in Boston, it's a bigger deal because there's more Notre Dame fans in Boston than Boston College fans.
Yeah.
Which I think also drives, if you are a student or a graduate of Boston College, I think that makes you even madder at Notre Dame, that, all of your friends are Notre Dame, even though you're in Boston.
But not only that, Boston College always seems to kind of eke out wins versus Notre Dame, I think. So, it's they're this annoying team that fucks up your season every so
Boston
often.
Boston College famously killed Notre Dame's before the Manti Te'o season.
Yeah.
Notre Dame's best shot at a national championship was back in 93. They were undefeated going into the Boston College game, and then Tom Coughlin's Boston College upset the undefeated Lou Holtz Notre Dame Irish.
That's what drove Lou Holtz to drinking.
Yeah, and they had already beaten Florida State in the regular season, but they lost that game, and so Florida State got into the national championship above them because Florida State had a better loss. Notre Dame beat Florida State. But Florida State's only loss was to Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's loss was to Boston College. So Florida State got in ahead.
Yeah.
That's college football logic, baby.
Yeah. So my wrap-up on the list, this was really dumb. This seemed like it was hastily made. Someone from marketing or advertising was like, hey, we need some dumb clickbait thing about games we're going to have on. And then two guys slapped their name on it and had, a PA make it. Or it. This was probably written by an intern who doesn't even understand college football.
And then two saps had their bylines slapped on it.
Yeah. That's what happened. I guarantee. This was written by, someone who's, more into tennis or something. Wrote this. So, that just kind of piqued my fancy this week, Dan. So I'm glad we could kind of break it down and attack ESPN for a harmless article, but just these little things bother me sometimes about how ESPN...
There's nothing harmless when you're that stupid. That's an affront to basic sanity. They're gaslighting me. That's a thing that people on Twitter say all the time about everything.
Yeah. Speaking of gaslighting, Auburn continues to gaslight its fan base by having a representative every year try to get Auburn to, move to the SEC East. This year, I believe it was Pat Dye on the Feinbaum show who said Auburn and Missouri should swap spots. Dan, you're not a big fan of this, correct?
Yeah, this is a terrible idea. And really, all you need to do is look at the Big Ten when they first got divisions. They tried to do this with Michigan and Ohio State. They put them in different divisions and had them play each other every year as a cross-divisional game. And here's why that doesn't work. For one, it's really bullshit for Ohio. It was bullshit for Ohio State and Michigan. Because they both had to play a much tougher team every year than a lot of the other teams in their division.
Yeah.
Because every year they had to play each other, whereas, Wisconsin got to play, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Okay, which one's fair?
Yeah.
So you're going to have that issue. Auburn's going to be – it's only going to take, one or two years where Auburn – loses to Alabama, and then Florida gets into the, or, you know, Georgia gets into the conference championship game over them, for them to go, this is shit. This is all bullshit. Like, that only needs to happen once before you realize how bad a decision this is.
But it's not a situation that really works out well for Auburn, I don't think, if they moved. It looks easier because you get Vandy and other teams, but you also get the Mississippi schools.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's the basic issue here. Is that, like, the divisions are not, like, static. It's not like the West has always been the toughest division in the SEC, and the East has always been terrible. Like, for the first decade and a half of the SEC's existence in the modern SEC, the West was a pile of shit.
Yeah.
And the East was a hell pit of just difficult teams. Like, and it was a really huge advantage for Auburn to be in the West. They made a couple SEC championship games they would not have made if they were in the East.
Yeah. And when you're running to Florida, Tennessee, like, they're even talented Georgia teams that won 7 games with great talent.
Yeah, there's some of those Jim Donnan Georgia teams, and, like, Jim Donnan got fired. If Jim Donnan had, like, if Georgia had been in the West, he probably would have won a divisional title.
Yeah.
Like, everybody forgets that, like, the really crappy Danny Ford Arkansas teams made an SEC championship game with, like, 7 wins. Like, the West was ass.
Yeah. Alabama was just dead at this point.
Yeah.
More or less.
I'm a huge proponent of if you're going to go divisions, you keep the rivalries together and you protect them. Because the one thing that's going to kill a rivalry is if you have the Iron Bowl and then it's like, okay, everybody, this is the most important game in the SEC. There's no game bigger than the Iron Bowl. All right, it's over. We're going to play it again next week.
Yeah.
Like, you do that and you're going to water down your rivalries. And it won't happen overnight. It won't happen over the course of, like, 1 year. You'll just look up 10 years later and go, huh, this game ain't what it used to be, is it?
No, and if you're, you know, if you're Auburn, there are other rivalries you lose out on, like the LSU or Ole Miss. These are rivalries that make money, you know?
Yeah. And the current system, they still have the Georgia game. Like, the Georgia game is protected.
So I never really get the moving thing. It sounds good on paper, but then you forget that, like, Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida are all sleeping giants. Programs that if they had a competent coach at all for, like, a couple of years, they could be powerhouses again.
I think college football over the last 15 years has been ruled far too much by short-term thinking and schools making decisions and pushing for things that will benefit them today without thinking about how is this going to affect our program 20 years from now.
Yeah. Crazy what happens when for these programs are run by a bunch of old people. That decisions are things aren't really thought through.
Or when you have a bunch of schools that are run by ADs that will be there for, like, 3 years and then move on to the next gig. Like, why do they care? Why do they care what will happen to the Auburn program in 20 years? It's almost like we have this, like, executive cult in America that's based around the idea that if you have executive experience, you can go anywhere and be an executive. And it's created a revolving executive door culture where people just go into a job, stay there for 3 years, make a bunch of short-term decisions, and then leave. It's almost like that's happening on a nationwide basis.
Crazy.
Causing our economy to collapse and shit.
Yeah. Wild stuff. But speaking of collapsing economies, there's a little event this weekend. I didn't watch, but you did, Dan. You were very excited. I'm talking about Eurovision. Let's recap. What happened?
Well,
what happened here?
If you're not familiar with the Eurovision Song Contest, it has been done since the 50s, I want to say. It was a way to rebuild European bonds post World War II. And originally, it was just the Western European countries. It slowly has expanded. After the fall of the Soviet Union, a bunch of the Eastern Bloc countries all came in, and now it is most of Europe. Plus Australia and Israel. This was their last year after 44 years of being in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Mm.
Which was sad, but Benjamin Netanyahu shut down the station that hosted Eurovision in their country, and so they're out of Eurovision now. Sadly. But on a, it was held this year in Ukraine, of all places. Russia,
the beautiful Ukraine.
Russia, who are usually always in the Eurovision and always do very well, were not allowed to perform because their contestant was not allowed into Ukraine, which made things a little awkward. There was a moment where some confetti cannon went off, and everybody you could see people ducking because they thought, oh shit. it was an uneasy Eurovision. Like, I think Russia not being allowed to participate, it being in Ukraine, Israel not, you know, this being their last year, it was a very odd year,
yeah,
Eurovision wise. But, and we also got a streaker. A man,
yeah,
ran on stage.
I didn't see the streaker. Australia.
A man ran on stage. No, he wasn't. He was Ukrainian. He was trying to make Australians look bad.
Ah.
That's the
other subplot. Have to try. You don't have to try very hard to make Australia.
That's the other subplot, is ever since they let Australia into the Eurovision, everyone else hates Australia.
Yeah.
Australia, see, the way the Eurovision Song Contest works is every country has both a popular vote, which you do by calling into a certain number or texting a certain number. When they'll flash a number up on screen and say,
like,
hey,
American
now it's time
Idol.
To vote. Yeah, like American Idol. They'll run through, and each country has their own number, and you dial that number, and that's how you vote.
Yeah.
That's 50% of the points that that a country will get, and you're not allowed to vote for your own country. The other 50% is done by juries, which each country selects a bunch of music experts who go to the Eurovision Song Contest, and they judge these things, and the juries tend to be more technical about the song, how good a song is it. They tend to be very focused on the song itself and how well it's performed, and then the popular vote tends to reward wackiness. Australia, their song was extremely popular with the juries, to the point where they finished in the top half of the contest, and they probably could have finished in the top five, except nobody voted for Australia, who was like an actual person. So they did very well with half the vote and ungodly bad with the other half.
So why do the Europeans not like Australia? It's pretty obvious why.
I think they're just mad that Australia's not in Europe, and they're just mad that they're allowed in the contest. Also, the one thing you have to keep in mind is that the original five countries who started Eurovision are England, France, Germany, obviously back then West Germany, Italy. And let's see, England, France, Germany,
Scotland,
Italy. Oh, I'm leaving out somebody. Germany, England, France,
Austria.
No, I think it's just the four. I think I may have just made up five. It's just the four. Huh. They get an automatic buy into the finals every year because they pay more. Spain. I left out Spain.
Spain.
Those five go into the finals every year, regardless of how good their song is, and everybody else has to qualify and go through the semifinals. So all the other countries pretty much shit all over the top five, unless they have a really, 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 really kick-ass song.
Yeah.
And England has not had a very good... England has not finished in the top since Iraq. Like since the Iraq War, England has not finished in the top 10.
Not been very popular. So, Dan, I think the important thing, though, as an American, when are we going to butt in and ruin this?
Oh, you have to join. You have to qualify for the Eurovision. You have to have a TV station in your country that is a member of the European Broadcasting Union.
Mm.
So we would probably have to be PBS that would have to apply.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the stations are like, you know, PBS for a different country.
Yeah.
Maybe Logo could apply for it, but that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to apply to be in the European Broadcasting Union.
Would they let America? I think they would want America in, right?
I don't think they would.
No.
I mean, I think America would ruin it.
We ruin everything.
They have reached out to Japan, though. Mm. Japan might be getting into the Eurovision in the coming years.
What if they invited Canada but not us? Is it rude of Canada to accept the invite if they know America isn't?
Canada could get in. Again, England might be able to muscle Canada in the same way England was able to muscle Australia in.
But would that be rude of Canada to accept? They know their friend America can't go. That seems like a nugget.
But it'd be very passive aggressive, and that's the Canadian way.
Yeah.
But
sorry, we didn't know.
This year's top Eurovision songs I would recommend to anybody is Italy. You know, they had a tremendous song with a dancing gorilla, which is actually, I believe, a hit song in Europe right now. Which is rare. Usually, the Eurovision song isn't that popular on the radio. Mm-hmm. It just wins the contest, a bit like American Idol. Moldova, are you familiar with the Epic Sax guy? That
yes.
meme from a few years ago.
Yes.
The band who gave us that returned to Eurovision for the first time since they performed that song, which created that meme.
Mm-hmm.
They returned with a new song, which was Dynamite. And Sweden had a guy who had a pop song with the word freaking in it. And they were on treadmills. Like OK Go.
Huh.
20 years ago.
Yeah. That's
oh, and
fun.
Romania had a combination rap yodel song.
Mm.
I highly recommend that.
Yeah, this is just for me. This is one thing where this is a big nope for me. It looks fun. I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, but me personally, no. It's not going to work with the Eurovision.
And of course, the winner.
I'd much rather do something less gay, Dan, and like have sex with a man than watch Eurovision. No.
Mm. Okay. Okay. I'll remember that. I'll remember that next coming out day. Portugal. Portugal.
Oh, it is. One. Glad I made a homophobic comment.
Portugal won this year with a man who seemed to have autism singing a very gentle, like a very, very gentle ballad while making Jerry Lewis faces. I watch it with the mute on just to look at this man's facial expressions. Mm. He is the most ridiculous looking person I've ever seen sing a song.
Yeah. So we get to it. Portugal wins, and so I
it's
guess the contest will be in Portugal. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. The winning country hosts the next year. So next year will be probably in Lisbon. I assume that's the only city in Portugal I know. So is Lisbon on the coast or is Lisbon in the center of the country?
Portugal, I don't know. They just put it in Brazil. It'd be way more fun.
Yeah, yeah.
What could go wrong in Brazil? Like, the Olympics went great. So
I feel like Brazil could host a concert.
I think Brazil would be the best at hosting what Eurovision sounds like. It sounds like Brazilian culture would align perfectly. Because they love to have fun in Brazil.
If you're looking for the worst countries, or so bad it's good, definitely go look up Montenegro's song. It didn't make it out of the semis, but holy shit. Holy shit. It was something.
So there we go. So that was Eurovision, Dan. before we get out of here, I do want to make sure, I want to talk some MMA.
Okay. You're on the halfguarded.com Eurovision Hour.
Yes. Conor McGregor has claimed he has signed the first half of the contract versus Mayweather. How long are they going to draw this out? Will Mayweather sign or not? This is the new story, right? We're going to push this to hype up the fight.
I just have this sinking suspicion Floyd's just using them to get publicity for his actual next fight. Because, he's not going to work for what UFC want to pay him.
Yeah.
Like, either UFC are going to have to pay a guy way more than they've ever paid anybody ever, or Floyd's just going to use them to build his name back up. Because,
Pacquiao. Yeah. But the guys in charge of UFC, it ain't really their money anymore. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Dana White doesn't really care as much.
Have you heard the rumor that this is like Dana and Connor are both going to do this fight and then peace?
Yeah.
Like this is just their big cash out and they're just going to leave
because it's UFC
AME holding the bag.
We talked about we talked about this a few weeks ago. UFC's kind of done with the everything that's happened at ESPN and at FS1. It's kind of over for UFC as a major thing. That'll probably offend a lot of certain journalists, but no one cares.
I mean, it's they're just going to get hurt by the whole landscape is going to.
Yeah.
I just don't see long term how this ownership group manages the sport, and like Dana White is only going to stick around for so long, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, they've already lost Joe Silva, and Joe Silva was a hell of a lot more important than I think a lot of people realize. Like, I think even the people at running the company who purchased it, like, they thought Dana White was the really important one, and I think Joe Silva was more important than Dana White.
Yeah.
And they kept Dana and lost Joe. They should have been given Joe ownership to stay.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, like, you don't have Goldberg there anymore. It's just not the same. It's not the UFC I liked. I'm just kind of over it, to be honest. I didn't even pay attention to the card this weekend.
We are talking MMA. The John Jones. I will not miss John Jones destroying Daniel Cormier.
Yeah.
If you told me that I could pay $50 and then go out in the alley by my house and watch John Jones like steal Daniel Cormier's lunch money, I would totally do it. Yeah. I don't care where I had to go. I don't care what speakeasy I had to pop into. I would, whatever I have to pay to go see John Jones ruin Daniel Cormier's life, I'm going to do it. I love that man. I love watching Daniel Cormier get humiliated. I will enjoy it again. And John Jones is a national fucking treasure.
Yeah. So, I think that's it for me this week. So, if you have anything else, Dan, before we get out of here.
Oh, man. Jesus. I mean, I didn't mention that. Go watch Azerbaijan. They had a guy in a horse hat who it was vaguely political, but so vague that you couldn't make out the politics of it anymore. It was a guy standing on top of a ladder with a horse mask on while a woman sang and wrote on a chalkboard. It was like one of those like really weird foreign films from the 30s.
So I believe that was protesting the original Iranian war?
Maybe?
No. Gay marriage? Fiat currency? I don't know.
I mean, I guess she wants to go back on the gold standard?
That the horse on a ladder, gold standard, that's the old saying.
But so. Then dramatically, the guy on the ladder took his horse mask off, and he basically looked like Rusev's skinnier little brother. and then he just stood on the ladder, holding the horse head. It was very political.
I will check that out. I think I'm done, though.
Fuck you to the week. Fuck you to the week.
Yeah.
Goes to Germany, because their song was bullshit. Like, it basically sounded like some bullshit your mom would listen to while running and like at a spin class.
My fuck you of the week is gonna go to Tim Allen. Sorry your show got canceled. Don't even know you had a show.
Have you ever heard the premise of that show?
No, I just know they have like they make a joke about Obama every so often. So conservatives think it's for them.
Well, it's a show about a conservative white dad whose whole family are liberals who are always telling him he's wrong about everything, but secretly he's right and they're dumb.
Mm. Just like conservatives think they are. So. Yeah.
And every like bloated conservative dad who's like constantly yelling about the mainstream media is as handsome and successful as Tim Allen.
Yes. Who snitched when he got busted for selling cocaine. People forget that.
How many conservative middle-aged white dudes are ex-drug dealers? I feel like that percentage is very high.
I think it's probably higher than you think if you factor in college. I mean, if you just sell a little bit of weed once, you're a drug dealer. You sell some Adderall once, bam. You're pretty much Pablo Escobar.
I mean, they love to fucking lecture us on morality, but they're constantly like drunk driving into like a school bus.
Yeah, and talking about how hot their daughters are.
Sure. So. No. Sure.
Yeah.
America.
But let's get out of here before we get
into
trouble.
Yeah, let's get out of here before Coughlin fires us.
Yeah.
So if we gotta get out of here, there's only one thing we can do, and that's pull the plug and play the music, Jason.
Bam.